Today's scripture reading is from Genesis chapter 50, verses 15 to 21. Realizing that their father was dead, Joseph's brothers said, "What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we have done to him?" So they approached Joseph, saying, "Your father gave this instruction before he died. Say to Joseph, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong they did in harming you. Now therefore, please forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also wept, fell down before him, and said, "We are here as your slaves." But Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid. I am in the place of God. Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones." In this way, he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thank you.
Well, if you've been here since the beginning of July, the last 6 weeks, you have a chance to be able to say now, at the end of today's sermon at least, that I have done a full survey of the book of Genesis. You can go home and brag to somebody about it, I guess. Maybe you can't say I have read it unless you have been, but you can at least say I've gotten the big stories out of the book of Genesis at least. We started the summer thinking, well, it's kind of lost here. We thought we had a new pastor, and then we didn't, and things didn't work out, but at least something's come of it, right? You've got the book of Genesis in mind. But some of the stories in Genesis are a little troubling, and some pieces of them are troubling at least, and I just want to, before we finish the book of Genesis, move on to Exodus next week to say that I hope that it's understood that we understood that the people were not always acting in the right way in Genesis. Is it agreed that we know that a man shouldn't be married to four women at the same time? I mean, that's kind of a given, right? We understand that. That wasn't the right thing to do, or be married twice. We understand now that women were not supposed to be property who were sold or given in marriage, and that women's only purpose was to deliver male children to their husband. We get that, right? I hope we do, at least. And the problem is that white males in the United States today are just a little crazy, except for me, of course. And sometimes we just go off the wrong end. And today there's a story that could take us in the wrong direction as well. And so I'm going to call attention to it now so that I can tell the story more cleanly when I get to it in the sermon. But there's a story of sexual harassment. And in this particular story, the harassment is a woman who is harassing a man. And then after she harasses a man, then she makes a false claim, a false accusation that he was harassing her. Now, that's the way the story is, and that's the way it's going to be told. But I want us to understand that harassment is normally an action of power. One person trying to exert power over another person in this kind of a way, whether it's sexual or physical or verbal, whatever it is, that's usually what the reason is. And in most cases, it is the man who has power over the women. Certainly, physically, most men have power over women, but in the way our culture has been set up, it's been true for a long time. So in today's world, where we live, we know that most of the time, harassment is a man harassing a woman rather than what happens in this story. And it's also true that we need to understand that women should not just, you know, I don't want anybody going out here saying, "See, I told you that women are always lying when they're making these accusations out of this story," because that's not the way it works. Most often, the person who makes the false accusation in these events is the perpetrator, not the victim. And the perpetrator is the person who is in power. And if you look at this story without worrying about the gender, you'll find that the person who was in power, the perpetrator, was the one who made the false claim. And we need to understand that because, I mean, sexual harassment is just was in the headlines yesterday. It's in the headlines all the time with us now, and we need to be clear about it. Is that good? We're good with that? You understand me? And I'm not getting myself in trouble too much. All right, so you're going to help me with the sermon today. This story has good news in it, and it has bad news in it. And you folks watching on Facebook, you have to follow along, too, so you'd be paying attention here. When I get to a point where there's good news, I'm going to give you a sign with my left hand. And when I give you that sign with my left hand, you are supposed to say, "That was good news." All right, let's try it. "That was good news." And then there'll be times when there's some bad news, and so whenever I tell you about the bad news, you need to be ready. I'll do it with my right hand, and I will say, "That was bad news." So say it with me, "That was bad news." Left hand good, right hand bad. Left hander's good, right hander's not so good. That's the way it is. I'm left-handed. You with me? All right. You know, by the time Joseph was 17 years old, it was already clear that he was Jacob's favorite son. I mean, it had been clear for a long time, and there were reasons for that, of course. He was only the 11th born son in the family, and so you would have thought Reuben would be the favorite, or one of the others coming along if Reuben had messed up. But surely you would get to the favorite child before you got to number 11. Except, if you remember, Joseph was the firstborn son of Rachel. Remember Rachel from last week? She was the woman that Jacob really loved, the one he worked 14 years for in order to be married. Joseph became the favorite son. And not only was he a favorite, but Jacob decided to show that he was the favorite. And so he made him a special coat. Now, some versions of the Bible say it was a multicolored or a coat of many colors kind of coat. You know, a rainbow coat that stands out in the crowd. The version that I have now calls it a long sleeve coat. One that would protect you from the summer sun, from the wind-blown sand in the summer, and from the cold of the winter. Whatever it was a special coat that set Joseph apart from all of his brothers. And it said to everyone, "Here is Jacob's favored child." And that was good news. Well, actually, it wasn't good news, as it turns out, because when he got that favored status among all the other brothers, what do you think all the other brothers thought of him? He had all these brothers now who ridiculed him, who made fun of him, who called him a dreamer and a lazy guy, and they were just doing everything they could. And to make matters worse, he sometimes brought home bad reports about the other brothers as if he could do it better than them, the young kid making fun of the older brothers. It made no sense. And then Joseph made it even worse because he started having real dreams. And one of the dreams he had, and then he told it to his brothers, which made it worse, it was that he and his brothers were all out harvesting sheaves, and his sheave stood up straight and tall, and the 11 sheaves of his brothers all bowed down to him. Now, didn't that make him popular among his brothers, right? That's not a good thing. But then he had another dream, and in this dream, as he told it to his brothers and the rest of his family, the dream was that he stood up tall and straight, and the sun and the moon and the 11 stars all bowed down to him. So that not only was he saying that his brothers were going to bow down to him, he was saying that his parents, the sun and the moon, were going to be bowing down to him as well. And that even made Jacob mad. And he ridiculed, reprimanded his son Joseph and said, "What are you talking about? I'm the father, you're the son. You don't bow down, I don't bow down to you, you bow down to me." Right? That's the way I was supposed to say that. And it really got mad. And so at that point, Joseph was in real trouble, and that was bad news. No, actually, it turned out to be good news, you see, because the good news here was that because he got himself in trouble with his brothers, Dad sent all the brothers out to work, and he left Joseph back at home. So that all the other brothers were out in the hot sun taking care of the flocks while Joseph was just kind of sitting back at home wearing his special coat, looking like the special favored child. Everything was okay. Except that after a while, things got to where the guys had been gone for quite a while. Dad wondered how they were doing, and so he thought, well, surely they've simmered down by now. Things will be better. Joseph, go out and find your brothers. Check on them. Come back and tell me how they're doing. Well, Joseph never thought too much about being in trouble. He was this favored child, thought that was fine. So he went out, went looking for the brothers. He got a ways, didn't know where to go, but he found somebody to tell him to turn to the left and head this way. They'd seen them, and so I finally went in that direction. And when he was a long distance away from the brothers looked up and saw him coming. And how do you know they recognized him? Well, you guys are good. By the special coat. Exactly right. He was wearing a special coat. And immediately, they began to plot to kill him. That was bad news, yes. That wasn't where we were supposed to say it, but it worked, right? Yeah. They began to plot to kill him. And they all worked it out, and they said, we're going to take his coat off of him, we'll put some blood on it, we'll take it home to Dad and make it look like a wild animal has killed him, and everything is going to be fine, and we'll be rid of our brother forever. And Reuben, the oldest son, heard them saying that, and he realized this was not good, that Dad was not going to be happy that his son had died. And so Reuben began to think something else, and he said, let's don't kill him. Let's just throw him into the pit. We'll rip his jacket off of him, throw him into the pit, let him suffer there for a long time, and he'll run out of food, and he'll die in the heat. Now, what Reuben really meant was he didn't want his brother to die. He was going to come back later and rescue Joseph and be able to take him back home so that he wouldn't die. And that was good news, except that it really wasn't good news, because the brothers agreed to it, and they threw Joseph into the pit, ripping his jacket off of him first, and they were going to leave him there for a while. But then a band of Ishmaelites came traveling along, half-cousins, you might say. They were the descendants of Abraham and Hagar. And as they came along here, one of the brothers, the economic genius in the group, said, wait a minute, we don't have to kill Joseph. Let's sell him. We can sell him as a slave, and then we'll make some money, and we'll never see him again, and we will have more money ourselves. And so the other brothers thought, well, that sounds like a good idea. And so they went along with the plot. They pulled Joseph out of the pit. They stood him up in front of the Ishmaelites and said, what do you give us for this young man? Look how good looking he is. And, you know, he's strong and virile and looks like just a fine young man and a good species. And wouldn't you like to have him as a slave? The Ishmaelites looked at him and thought, well, I believe we could make some money on this guy. And so they paid them 20 pieces of silver for Joseph. And then the brothers, having gotten rid of him, finished out the plot that they had originally planned. They took the coat. They spread animal blood all over it. They took it home to Dad. And they said, Dad, we found this coat out in the field. We wonder whose it is. Well, of course, they knew that Dad was going to recognize this coat. And as soon as he saw the coat, Dad said, that's Joseph's coat. A wild animal has devoured him. I should never have sent him out there. He is the only son that I cared so much about, and I sent him out, and now he's dead. And so Jacob began to mourn, and he mourned day after day after day at the loss of his son, never really to recover until the end of life. In the meantime, Joseph was being taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelites. And when they got to Egypt, they took him to a country where he didn't know the language. He wasn't familiar with the culture. And as it turns out, people who were from the Canaan area where Jacob and his family were an anathema to the people who were from Egypt. They did not want to intersect with each other. So he was a slave now by the Ishmaelites, now sold in Egypt to a place where he didn't know people, he didn't know culture, he didn't know religion, he didn't know language. It was basically end of life, right? End of story for Joseph. And that was bad news. No, actually, it turned out to be good news. Because, you see, he was sold to Potiphar. And Potiphar was the person who was not exactly second in command, but pretty much high up in command with maybe a member of the cabinet, you might say, of the Pharaoh. He was the captain of the guard in Egypt. And so he had a lot of power and position, and because of that, he also had a lot of wealth. And so it meant that Joseph had a pretty good life. And as we hear over and over again, whatever Joseph did seemed to turn to gold. I mean, it was just everything he did, whatever he said, always turned out well for some reason. And so when Joseph was the slave of Potiphar, he was doing the kind of work that was bringing honor to him. And so he got a promotion and then another promotion and another promotion until finally Joseph became basically second in command to Potiphar. And Potiphar realized that Joseph was so good at doing what he was doing and so trustworthy in what he was doing that he allowed him to do basically all of Potiphar's work. He controlled everything. And so he was doing very well there. In fact, he was in a position where he didn't have to worry about food. He didn't have to worry about the clothing he would wear. He was learning the language. He was learning the culture. People respected him. And, of course, that was good news. Well, actually, it didn't turn out to be good, as it turns out, because when he got this position, Potiphar's wife, here comes that story I was talking about, took a liking to him. She was married, but she liked Joseph. I mean, Joseph was a young man, and he looked like the right kind of guy and all that kind of thing. And so every day, she was propositioning him. She was saying, come on, Joseph, come and spend some time with me. Let's cuddle together. Let's be together. Let's play together. That's the G version of what she was saying, of course. Right? And Joseph resisted day after day. No, I will not do that. I am in area of responsibility for Potiphar and you. I will not do anything that would divide the two of you, separate you from each other. I want to be trustworthy in all that I do. And Joseph had this really strong ethical understanding that he was not going to allow it to happen. Except that one day, as he was going through the house, Potiphar's wife, she doesn't have a name, it's just Potiphar's wife, was in there, and she continued to try to get his attention. And as he walked past, she grabbed him by the robe. And when she grabbed him by the robe, it startled him a little bit, and he jumped away from her. And when he jumped away, she pulled, and as it turned out, she just pulled his robe off of him. And that scared him, of course. And so Joseph, not knowing what else to do, ran out of the house. And when she found out that she was holding Joseph's robe, she quickly figured out that this could look like she was the one in trouble. And so she instead screamed very loudly and called everybody around and said, this slave Joseph that we have here has been trying to attack me. And I tried to get away from him, and he left his robe right here in my hands. And then she called in Potiphar and told the same story to him. And of course, everybody believed her. And Potiphar, as you might expect, was enraged. And so he called Joseph in. He told him that he was going to send him to prison. He put him in prison, and as far as Potiphar was concerned, he could rot in prison the rest of his life. End of story. No more Joseph. No one would ever see him outside of a prison again. And that was bad news. No, actually, it didn't turn out to be bad at all, because while he was in prison, Joseph did what he always does, right? He was good. He did good things. And the prison guard who was there realized that Joseph seemed to be trustworthy in all that he did. Maybe he began to believe Joseph's story a little bit about how he had been falsely accused. I don't know, but he began to give Joseph more and more responsibility in the prison until finally Joseph was basically doing the prison guard's work. After a while, it happened that the king, Pharaoh, he got angry with his cupbearer and his baker. You know, the guy that held his cup for him when he was needing to take a drink, or the person that was doing the baking for him. He threw them both into prison. And after they'd been there for a day or two and they'd gotten acquainted with Joseph, one morning Joseph came in, saw them, and said, well, why the sad faces? You all look like you're sad today. And the two men said, well, we had dreams last night. Each of us had a dream, and we don't know what they mean. And Joseph said, well, God can interpret dreams. Just tell them to me, and I think that God will help me understand and tell you what they mean. So the cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. Joseph said, simple enough, not a problem. What this means is that within 3 days, the king is going to come and take you out of prison, and he's going to lift up your head and put you back in the position you were. All will be forgiven. You will do the job you've always done. Now, having told you that, I only ask you, when it happens, remember me to the Pharaoh. After all, I was sold into slavery for no real reason. And then I came here, and I was doing everything I should do, and then I got falsely accused, something I didn't do, and put into prison, and I shouldn't be here. So please, when you get there, remember me to the Pharaoh. And the cupbearer said, well, sure, I'll do that. The baker heard the interpretation of the dream and said, oh, great, I think this is good. Maybe it's going to be true for me too. So he told Joseph his dream. And Joseph said, well, sure, easy enough. I can tell you what that means. It means that within 3 days, the king is going to come here. He's going to take you out of prison, and he's going to lift up your head right off of your neck. He's going to hang you. It's time for that sound again over here, whoever said that, yeah. Lift your head right off of your neck. He's going to hang you. And as it turns out, that's exactly what happened. The cupbearer was restored to his position, and the baker was hanged. Unfortunately, when the cupbearer got to be with the Pharaoh, he forgot all about Joseph. Didn't say anything at all about him for 2 years. 2 whole years passed until one day the king had a dream himself. He had 2 dreams, actually, but they were similar to each other. And he didn't know what they meant, so he called together all of the people who were important around him, called them all in, told them the dream, said, somebody interpret this dream to me. And so they thought about it, they talked about it, they collaborated, they got a committee together, they did all those kind of things, and they got nothing. No way to understand it. Well, the cupbearer began to see that maybe the king was getting a little agitated, and then he remembered what happened when the king got agitated. He got thrown, you know, the cupbearer got thrown into prison, which wasn't good, and they thought, oh, wait a minute, prison? Well, there was a guy there that interpreted my dream and got me out of here, so yeah, this is good. So he told the Pharaoh about Joseph. The king said, well, all right, bring him in here. Maybe he can do it. Nobody else can. So they brought him out of slavery, out of the prison, I should say, Joseph, put him in front of the king. The king said, I've got these dreams. Joseph said, God could interpret dreams for you. I can't, but God can. Tell them to me, and I will try to help you understand what God would have you know from these dreams. And so that's what the king did. He told him his 2 dreams. Joseph said, well, the dreams are basically the same dream. It's the same dream twice. And what it means is that for these next 7 years, there will be plenty of food across the land. The crops will be plentiful in the harvest, and you will have more than you could ever want. And everybody will be happy with all that they have. But then the next 7 years, when they come, they will be famine. There will be no good food. There will be no food. And so you need to find a person to manage for you this process, a person who can gather up all the extra resources you get in these next 7 years, put them into storehouses so that you have plenty of resources so that when the famine comes, there will be food for everyone to eat. Well, the king thought this was pretty smart, pretty good idea. And so what he said to Joseph was, well, there's nobody any wiser than you here. I might as well have you do it. You're the one that was able to interpret the dreams. I've heard stories about how you were doing good work in the prison. And so why don't I have you? I'm just going to hire you. And Joseph said, well, no. I'm just hanging out in prison. I got nothing else on my schedule. I might as well. Actually, that's not in the Bible, but I like the story. But the king said, you're going to do this. And Joseph said, yes. And so not only did the king put Joseph in charge of that, but he took his own signet ring off, put it on Joseph's hand, so that Joseph became the second most powerful person in the kingdom. When he went down the street, people would bow down to him and call him by his Egyptian name. And over these next 7 years, then Joseph made sure that they gathered in all the extra food. They built storehouses, and when those were full, they built more storehouses. And when those were full, they built more storehouses until they finally quit measuring how much they had stored up in those 7 years, and it all appeared to be going quite well. But as Joseph had predicted, after those 7 years, the famine came. And when the famine came, people began to come back in. But of course, they had put all this food in storehouses, and so they sold the food back to the people, and everybody was able to eat. Everything seemed to be going as Joseph had predicted, and that was good news. And actually, it was good news. It was good news indeed for everybody, because everybody was able to eat in this famine time. But even more importantly for Joseph and his family is that the famine was also taking place in the land of Canaan, where Jacob and his sibling, his children and family were living. And they've heard that people were going down to Egypt to get food. So Jacob finally said to his sons, you need to go down to Egypt and get some food for us. They tell me that they are selling the food there, and I'll send money with you, and you can buy it and bring it back. Except that I'm not going to send Benjamin. Now, do you know about Benjamin? Benjamin is the 12th son of Jacob, the second child of Rachel. And so Benjamin, if Joseph was the favorite child, Benjamin was the second favorite. And now that Joseph was gone, Benjamin had to be protected at all costs as far as Jacob was concerned. So we're keeping Benjamin here, and all the other brothers go. And that's what happened. The brothers went to Egypt, and finally they were confronted and stood in front of the person who was second in command to the Pharaoh of Egypt, a person who had an Egyptian name. They did not recognize that it was Joseph, but Joseph recognized them. He probably was looking for them. They didn't ever expect to find him there. And he talked to them through an interpreter so that it looked like he didn't understand their language, even though he knew everything they were saying when they were talking to each other. So when the brothers got there, Joseph recognized what was going on, and it seems like then is when he decided to play some games with them. And so this happens over two or three times. At the very beginning, Joseph says to them, I think you guys are spies. And they said, no, we're not spies. We're honest people. And he said, well, you can prove to me that you're not spies by I'm going to put you all in prison except for one person. I'm going to send that one person home to get that little brother you told me that you had, because they had told him about Benjamin, even though he already knew about it, and bring him back here. And they said, oh, we can't do that. Our dad will not allow Benjamin to come. And he said, well, that's the only way it's going to happen. So he put them in prison for 3 days. Then he changed the story and said, all right, I'm just going to send all of you except for one of you. One of you will stay in prison here. The rest of you will go home to get your brother. But you will not get this brother out of prison until you bring Benjamin back. So when the brothers got home, they told Dad what had happened. Dad said, well, I'm sorry about the one that's still there, but you're not taking Benjamin. We're all staying here. Except that the famine continued and it got worse and worse, and they ran out of food until Jacob finally had to relent and allow them to take Benjamin with them. One of the boys saying, I will be surety for him. If he doesn't come back alive, then you can take me. I'll be held slave in his stead. They went back. They were confronted by Joseph again. This time they had Benjamin with them, and so they had this encounter where Joseph recognized Benjamin. They told him who he was, and he was able to recognize him and to celebrate that he knew him, even though none of them knew it was Joseph. And Joseph sent them back with food and money, except that he put his silver cup in Benjamin's sack to send it back, to send them back home. And then after they'd been gone for a short time, he sent a servant out there to go back and get them and to claim that Benjamin had stolen the silver cup. And so they had to come back again as if he was going to enslave them all. He was just kind of making them remember what evil they had done to him, I suppose, was going on here. When they got back this time, all the brothers together were in front of Joseph, and he had come to the point where he could not any longer contain himself. Sent everybody out of the room except for his brothers, and he said, I'm your brother, Joseph. Now imagine what it's like to be these 11 brothers standing in front of Joseph in this moment. He is the one person who can give them food or take it away. He's the one person who can put them in prison or let them go free. He's the one person who can take their life or let them have it. And not only that, but he's the one person that they ripped his coat off, threw him into a pit, let him suffer in the heat, and then sold him into slavery, and then never came looking for him. Would you want to be one of those brothers then? That was bad news. Well, turns out it wasn't. It wasn't bad news at all, because Joseph knew all that, and he still said to his brothers, I forgive you. What I want you to do now is go back home, get Dad, get the rest of the family, get all the livestock, bring them back to Egypt. We'll give you the best land in Egypt for you to graze the livestock that you have, so that everybody will live well. We'll make sure that you have food to eat. We are going to take care of you here. And so that's what they did. Jacob and his family all came back into Egypt. They lived there comfortably together. Everything went quite well. It seemed like everything had been solved and resolved, right? And so that was good news, except it wasn't quite. Because Jacob died. And after Jacob died, after they had buried Jacob, the brothers, as you heard in the scripture a little while ago, the brothers began to worry. You know, maybe Joseph has just been nice to us because of Dad. And now that Dad's not here to protect us anymore, he's probably going to do whatever he wants to do to us. So what did they do? They made up a story. Still telling lies after all this time, still getting themselves in trouble after all this time. They made up a lie. They went to Joseph and said, when Dad was still alive, he told us that he wanted us to tell you that you need to forgive us for all the things that we did bad to you, all those evil things we did. But before they could even finish, Joseph stopped them. And he said, you know, I know who you are. I know all that you've done. I know how this has all worked out. It happened to me. I know that you intended it for evil. But look at it. All the evil you intended, God has turned into good. Isn't that a refreshing thought for us today? You know, we have our good days, we have our bad days, we have the times when we think everything is going to work out just exactly the way we want it to work out, and then we have the days where it just doesn't happen, where it's not good, where it seems like evil has worked its way into our lives, and in spite of everything we might try to do, it seems like we have come to the end. But that's when we find, in that moment, is when we find that God is at work, reshaping, remolding, adjusting, shifting, so that in the end, it is God's victory. What the world might intend as evil, or what might seem as evil to us, God designs for good. And that is good news. It is good news indeed.